Scylla and Charybdis. Now, this is possibly an easier metaphor to come up with because it's one we use daily, almost, in some form or other, because Devil in the Deep Blue Sea means the same thing. But, okay, so tell us about Scylla and Charybdis then.
So, this again is one of the classic metaphors. You know, again, fits in with the Cyclops and the Sirens as well. Scylla is the six-headed monster on one side of a seagoing passageway, and Charybdis is the whirlpool. And I think Odysseus is advised probably to hew closer to Scylla because he'll lose fewer of his sailors than to Charybdis, where he'll lose all of them. And again, I think this was very much around the dangers that VR can pose. I struggled a little bit again to find a suitable analogy for Scylla or Scylla. Charybdis was a little bit easier, but the two that I've come up with here for this one, now it's a bit of a tortured metaphor, but obviously some of these are going to be quite tortured. So Scylla in Greek myth was a beautiful nymph who was transformed into a monster, and it was a danger to pass this monster. One of the early apps that was really, again, quite instructive for me, and you have to bear with me while I explain this particular metaphor, and it's one that's quite commonly available across lots of headsets and lots of different kind of app stores as well. And this is called Anne Frank House, and it's a digital recreation or imagined recreation of the house that Anne Frank was trapped in during the Nazi occupation of Amsterdam. So I was thinking, this is not so much a young girl transformed into a monster, this is a young girl transformed by monsters. This is not so much that it's a danger to pass by her, it's more that it was a danger for her to leave the house. And again, this was one where you have the ability to move around. So like with Pollinator Park, you've got 6 degrees of freedom, but it's a really, really cramped environment. It's a really, really powerful way of conveying what it must have been like for Anne Frank to be trapped in this house where, you know, she had to go silent when certain sounds passed by. You got to sort of go into a hidden kitchen area and turn on the radio, and you know, you hear the sound of bombers going overhead or something like that. And it was a little tricky to know how to move around in it. But one of the things that it also really brought home to me was what a powerful tool virtual reality can be to convey history.
Yeah, that reminds me of some stuff I was working in VR. And one of the things why VR works is because people feel immersed, not just from a kind of sensory point of view, but from a psychological point of view. And that requires them to feel connected to that space in a sort of emotional way, that kind of affective connection. And different students found different things, because we'd let them go off and explore and do all this sort of stuff. One of the students did find a Holocaust museum, and that was so powerfully moving for them that was their point of affective connection with that technology. So that's the kind of route we'd want to steer our students through, is feeling that affect, because I think that's always underestimated with the role of technologies. How has that made you feel with particular instances? Is there not necessarily a negative or positive, but powerful or placid? But then what you don't want is, and this is me steering my course between two things, you got the kind of whirlpool of platitudes and pointlessness and dreariness, and you just get sucked down into this whole landscape of, this isn't doing anything for me. But on the other side, you're right, it's so monstrous that we'll have students walking away deeply upset by this in a way that won't be productive. And I think there is a sort of balance we need to strike. And it's going to be different for every student, and it will be different for most technologies or what they encounter in those technologies. How do we get that balance between lack of effect, which is just dull and gets us nowhere, but such powerful effects? Because I can imagine a lot of people being so distraught by that they wouldn't want to put a headset on again, really. And yeah, I guess that's what that metaphor connects with me through, is steering that course. And I would say that on the whole, I've had more students come away from it because nothing's connected. But I have had some students come away just being so upset by something that they didn't want to do it again. And as a teacher, using that as an environment, I think it's impossible to get right.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think, you know, when you're comparing Scylla and Charybdis, Charybdis is the boring side of, you know, nobody's going to want to come back. You really haven't engaged any of your students. But on the other hand, you've got Scylla, and Scylla always grabs six. You know, she's got six heads. She's always going to grab six people. And so you're going to lose a few. And you're going to lose a few. You're going to lose some because they've engaged too deeply. But you're going to engage some because they've got motion sickness. You're going to lose them. You're going to lose the ones who can't see what's going on. So it's the technology that's very difficult to get absolutely everybody engaged with it and happy with it.
But to extend that metaphor more, if you go too close to Scylla, you'll lose six. But if you go too close to Charybdis of the whole boredom whirlpool, you'll lose everyone.
Yeah, you lose them all, yeah.
So my other thing for Charybdis is around total immersion, you know, the sort of too much consumption as well. So how much is too much time in VR? Now, there are different views on this. There's a sort of news story that came out from Meta recently around the sort of Goldilocks zone of somewhere between 20 and 40 minutes. Balanson, in his Experience on Demand book, talks about sort of, you know, even 5 to 10 can be enough.
Wow.
And one of the things that I used in exploring VR a little bit further was movies. So there was you can log into the Apple TV app, or you could download the BBC iPlayer or the Channel 4 app, that kind of stuff, and just watch full movies in there. So there are a couple of films I watched in there. So I watched Moon Age Daydream, which is the David Bowie biopic. This was a film that I originally saw in the IMAX in London. It was the first IMAX experience I had, and it's, you know, seeing a movie, you know, 50 foot tall or something like that is, you know, is a very immersive experience, much more than when you're a bit further back in the cinema. So VR, you know, movies in VR, it's like having an IMAX movie strapped onto your face where there's nobody else in the cinema. And the second one I watched, which is ideal circumstances for watching a film, right? And the second one I watched in there was Blade Runner 2049.
Wow.
So this was the year before the European Commission's Pollinator Park app. This was a sort of deeply dystopian view of a future America where, you know, the orange skies look very similar to, you know, recent photographs of, you know, New York following the Canadian forest fires and this kind of stuff. All of the sort of recommended guidelines told me don't spend 2 hours in VR. And, you know, it's a 2.5 hour movie, Blade Runner, this Runner one. And I spent the whole time in it until the battery ran out on the headset. And I had no idea if it was a good thing to do or not.
Well, I've never got fed up with it before the batteries run out. So I do, you know, start play Star Wars games in there. I play the golf quite a lot. And yeah, definitely an hour minimum. And then I've got the spare battery, because the headset with the spare battery in. And I don't think that's ever an issue, really, to spend longer in there. I could imagine if you had, perhaps, nobody gets more motion sickness than I do, so that's not necessarily an issue, but definitely fatigue could be an issue for people. But I don't see what longer would be a problem with. I guess the only thing would really be if you're teaching people, is your normal thing about how long can learners study for or listen for. But maybe I'd have guessed, if anything, their capacity to carry on being engaged within VR is going to be higher than it would have been sitting in a lecture room listening to somebody talk at them. Definitely seems like an underestimation of what the limits could be.
But I think it's interesting also that you're using that comparison with watching a movie, because I read a huge amount of things that say when you're showing students video, you shouldn't show them more than about 6 minutes because they can't concentrate for more than 6 minutes. And then you think, but they sit through a movie. And if they were doing film studies, they would sit through a movie. So it's not really that they haven't got the concentration. It's something about what you are presenting to them. And I guess if you are presenting them with a 6 minute learning experience, then they should only be there for 6 minutes. And there's no point in saying, and now you could explore the entire Martian landscape, because you know, they don't need to do that. They just need to look at this one thing that you're telling them about. So I think it takes us back to learning design rather than to the sort of physicality of, oh, yes, there's an absolute time that they should be in there. They should be in there for as long as they need to be in there.